we'll just start recording anyway, because something cool might happen.
Yeah.
When we're recording.
Yeah, so, we're back. Oh my God, here we are, the two Gen Xers who think PC stands for some kind of, purposeful cannabis. So let's get back to it.
Everything's perverted for Gen Xers, actually. It's either has to do with drugs or something weird and sexual but in nature.
Some of the best stories I read were from the pages of Playboy, and that's no kidding. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, Stephen King got his start there.
That's true.
And then Malcolm X's one of his first in-depth interviews was in there.
So we're back after
God knows how long.
How many months? But I did a trailer, so we kind of had to commit to this. And yeah. Remember, I think it's important to always say thank you to all our listeners, first of all, especially the people from out of the States. We got listeners from out of the States, all across the world. So please find us the Facebook page, and please, if you would like to hear something, leave a comment.
Sorry for the hiatus, but it's COVID.
It's COVID. It's Omicron. And since we're Gen Xers, everybody's like saying Unicron. It's Unicron.
It's going to be Megatron.
Yeah, Megatron.
And I just got done reading that they have some kind of stealthy version now of Unicron. Or Omicron.
If you want this up higher, it'll sound a lot better.
Sorry about that.
You don't have to speak directly into that one. You can just speak out and it'll be fine. Totally fine.
So, we're kind of shooting from the hip a little bit.
You don't have to bend down. It'll get you. Okay. I'm just trying to level the sound. So. Yeah.
We definitely need to get some of those Willy mics to hang.
The Willy mics. I have the Willy mic today.
So we're all glad to be back and having you around, dear listeners. We're sorry about the long time, but we both got our own individual duties for family and all that. And plus, we're just lazy, just to be honest.
And then there's a lot of stuff going on. In the Pacific Northwest. And that's the point of the show. We want to talk about the Pacific Northwest. Garner interest in the Pacific Northwest.
In local news.
In local news.
And it just made the paper like
And it just made the ago. Paper yeah. recently.
It was like 10 what was days it? Ago.
The vice principal and one of the teachers were from one of the local high schools, Toppenish High School, they were involved in some sort of scandal. I don't want to name them. It's kind of, they're probably getting rolled in the dirt as enough as it is. So,
enough that it got brought up during a couple of the games, from what I was told.
Yeah.
other people from other schools are kind of making light of it and having their fun with it.
Yeah.
But you can read all about it. You just got to do the Google search. I mean, that's how easy it was for me to find out.
Toppenish High School.
Yeah.
Toppenish.
Scandal.
In central Washington.
Yeah. And sounds like something straight out of a Dateline news story.
Yeah.
It really does. So tonight's little episode will be sponsoring our infamous Badman of the Northwest. It's going to be a short list since the Northwest is kind of a... No, it's not exactly, Arizona territory or, anything from that you're familiar with from Hollywood or from, history.
But there's been bad men in the Northwest. And then we're not talking like serial killers. That one's, we've discussed Ted Bundy and the Green River Killer before.
Oh, yeah. They actually were, when I was doing the research for this, they made like the top seven. There were like three of the guys who were from Northwest who were serial killers. They made the top seven list. I was kind of I didn't know if that would be abhorred by that or strangely proud, but I'm more kind of horrified.
So I'm thinking about that just the recent scandal. That's I guess it could fit into a bad man.
Oh yeah,
of Pacific Northwest. But I don't know if it's. They're really bad men. Maybe bad boys are just living out their high school fantasy still. I'm going to go Jordan Peterson on this one. They're just still living out that high school fantasy that they just couldn't let go of. They just couldn't let go of years ago, and I need to grow a beard too.
So, first runner-up, one of the ones I was most interested in was he was a subject of a dime store novelist by the name of Harry Hawkeye. His... the man in question, his name was Harry Tracy. He was called the King of the Bandits. He was more or less a escape artist rather than being known for anything that he robbed or took. He was actually notorious for sticking up cars on the highway. He was known as a highwayman. And he had a partner by the name of David Merrill. They both escaped from prison from in Salem, Oregon. And excuse me if I'm wrong in that, but I'm pretty sure that's where it was. Institution, somebody snuck two guns into them. To this day, I don't know who that was. They shot some guards on the way out. And Harry Tracy later shot his partner in the back in their escape in Southwest Washington. For undisclosed reason, but he kind of had a bad temper. He was also known for doing, and this is one of his more infamous crimes, but it wasn't exactly something that on the steps of Jesse James or in the same kind of venue. He stuck up a Portland trolley, and because he didn't exactly plan it out. It wasn't like a Pacific Northwest Railroad car or anything. It was just a trolley. He only got the conductor's watch, and that was it. That was the extent of his booty on that little jaunt. He was pulling these off and around in about 1902, and he was like one of the last breaths of the Wild West bandits. And this is something that was, really widespread news, sort of like the modern bank robbers or like the Hollywood shootout guys, he was in the venue that he was the John Dillinger before there was John Dillinger.
Yeah, well, a lot of people think the Wild West was like Arizona and New Mexico, but they don't. I mean, they fail always look at the Pacific Northwest. Even the Seattle Times they wrote. Jesse James compared to Tracy as a Sunday school teacher. So, like, he was a really bad dude. I mean, he was so bad, he didn't live that long. He wasn't even that old when he was killed. And I think he was killed by the Lincoln County sheriffs, wasn't he?
Yeah. So. He was known for taking hostages all the way across the Pacific Northwest. And I believe he got killed at a place that bears his name, because that's where where he got shot was. It's now still to this day called Tracy Rock. And rather than being, he got hit in the leg and it cut an artery. So they tracked him down to a barley field and they followed blood trail. But his reputation was so notorious, they didn't bother to come back till the next day to see if he was still alive. They knew he was wounded, but they were waiting him out to see if he would give up willingly. But when they approached and they finally found him, he had taken his own life with a pistol. So rather than being taken alive, he was shot fatally. But he didn't want to go back to prison whatsoever. This is, I believe, it was in Chehalis County.
Western Washington.
Yeah, somewhere around. Yeah, he had a knowledge of where he's from. He was supposedly he moved here from Wisconsin, and he did a small run with the Hole in the Wall gang down Butch Cassidy's little gang down in Utah. Whom my family actually has some ties to.
The Tracy has such a short history too. We can't really say how many crimes are committed or what he was involved in. I mean, now there's mass media and mass communication. We can almost link people that are in jail to like multiple crimes that were gone unsolved for years. This was during the time when this was still really a wild area and people were just barely. Immigrants were coming here, European immigrants, I'm going to say that, from the west, from the east.
Yeah, so there was another man who, runner up, I don't know, is that pretty much with Harry, Mr. Tracy there?
I guess. I mean, you got a list of bad men you want to go over.
Yeah, they're bad. It's not that big of a list, yeah, actually.
And you should take some time to look them up because there are... it's kind of really hard to find this information because there was not I mean, I personally, when I look at the history, I don't think there was a lot of record keepers in that area at all. There is nobody, there's no scholars, there's no academics, there's nobody writing this stuff down. There's, you know, police records, and police records are short. Descriptions are short, everything.
Yeah.
They're not as detailed as they are now.
Yeah. Did you know in Yakima, Yakima's early history, when they moved, right after they moved the city of what is now called Union Gap to North Yakima, somebody had burnt down the newspaper building because they printed some stuff that they didn't like. It was after some labor protests. This was the early 20th century, like somewhere around 1908.
And it wasn't BLM folks. It was actually it was white people.
Yeah.
And nothing against white people, because we have ancestors who are. I really hate the term. It's kind of a.
We have some, yeah, we have some colonists genetics in us.
It wasn't the natives. It was the colonists. I think the natives were like, "What are these people doing here? They're crazy." They showed up. They're lighting everything on fire. They're shooting everybody. They're trying to dig into the ground for gold. And that was another big thing that I think brought a lot of bad guys up here, was the gold rush.
Yeah.
And you bring, and with a thing like that, you bring a lot. I always look at my, we're talking about Badman. I looked up my ancestor, Marcel Gagnon, who came out of Canada. And I was like, I always wondered, he was probably this guy who probably did something bad, and he's like running away from it. Because that's what a lot of people did. They do bad stuff and they just run away from it.
Yeah. So, there was one guy who, his name was John Tornow, also known as the Wild Man of Wenatchee. Not Wenatchee, Wenatchee, Washington. I'm probably butchering that name. This is on the Olympic Peninsula near the Satsop River. He in his early life, he was kind of he was one of those kind of kids that liked to play outside all the time. Eventually, he ended up kind of like preferring the company of animals and being out in the wild. He kind of grew up in the, as a mountain man. He was born in September of 1880. He just was kind of all around. Wilderness guy who just loved to spend some time. He had brothers who had successfully started a logging company, and he occasionally worked with them. And he also had a sister. But when he decided that one day he was gonna kind of like settle with his family members in Jackson County. I probably got that wrong. But he accidentally, one day he was sleeping, and he woke up and he saw a cow outside of his window. So he shot it. So, you know, this was somewhat on the property of his sister's house. And he went out and started butchering it, and was, you know, getting ready to, start taking the bounty from it, you know, all the meat. And he kind of was not paying attention. He heard a shot ring out. Well, he was such a wilderness guy, and he was so accurate with his rifle. He shot back three times, not knowing who was shooting at him or why. And it turns out he ended up killing his twin nephews. He shot three times.
And he didn't even know what he was shooting at.
Yeah, he hit them both, and he. He ended up trying to figure out what to do. So he ended up taking off. He grabbed all his stuff and he took off into the wilderness.
It sounds like a Cormac McCarthy novel, you know. But he writes about the Appalachians. This is the Olympic Peninsula, and people that aren't from here don't really know how huge it is. But when you're driving, where you can actually see the Olympic Mountains the best is when you're in Bellevue, which is across Lake Washington from Seattle. And if you see the Olympic Mountains, they kind of, Seattle's right there with all the high rises and everything, but past the high rises, you can actually see the huge mountains, and they're so huge, they just dwarf the city. So it's a huge area. Anybody could go probably disappearing, missing there easily. I wonder if he married his sister.
No, he was not. No, he just wasn't really kind of sociable person. He was kind of anti. He was kind of like the definition of antisocial.
Yeah, he was antisocial, definitely.
When he was a child, when he was a teenager, he spent weeks out in the woods, and he hunted, and he brought back food for his parents, and eventually, okay, so after he had accidentally killed his nephews, and they're not sure if that was if what exactly happened, because they found found the bodies after a day of searching and did not know exactly what had happened. They kind of pieced it together at the time.
I think he caught the nephews kissing his sister and he got jealous.
They said they might have accidentally mistaken him for somebody who was rustling their cattle and had killed.
Probably. I mean, that happened. That probably happened a lot. Oh, they're cattle rustlers and shoot them on accident. I mean, even accidental shootings happen like all the time in the United States every single day.
Yeah, this happened in September of 1911. So on his fugitive run, he had gone to Jackson County, the grocery store, and he was known to have going to different places to take supplies, you know, to supplement what he needed out there in the wilderness. You know, everybody needs a candle and matches, you know, occasionally. Yeah. Other stuff, you know, canned goods. So Jackson County grocery store also doubled as the bank. So he got lucky and he stole a lockbox with $15,000 in it. Now back then, that might have been akin to probably $50,000.
Yeah, it'd probably be. I think $15,000 1911 would probably be inflation. I bet you it's like $100,000 today.
Yeah.
Because I remember back in the 80s, like you could get a comic for a quarter. Now comics are like $5 or $10, and people are like, "What? You could get a comic for a quarter back then?" Like, yeah, sometimes you go find the right place for 10 cents or 5 cents.
And when penny candy was
that penny. Was in the 80s, too, yeah. Remind you. That wasn't even, then penny candy was really pennies, and you could get a Chico stick for 5 cents. Now I don't even know how much those are.
So Mr. Torno.
Torny.
He had led various law enforcement authorities across.
Not a Torn, it's Tornow. That's an inside joke.
Across the north west and near the Olympic Peninsula on a month long, and almost stretching to almost a year.
Does he count as a bad man, or is he just a? I think.
Well, he robbed a bank and killed two people.
Yeah, that's true. He is a bad man. So.
There was one part that when they had discovered I can't remember exactly where this happened, but when they had discovered a suspicious campsite where they thought that he might have been,
yeah,
a sheriff and his deputy went after him. Well, they didn't come back. They had gotten a posse together and went to go find Mr. Tornow, and they found the bodies. They had been shot between the eyes and gutted. So yeah, he was kind of a bad guy.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah, that's pretty gruesome. And considering he gutted animals to survive, you know, he probably that was kind of a gruesome thing to do to a couple dead bodies.
But I wonder, like, how he kind of cracked. If that actually ran in the family, or if that was just purely him, or.
Yeah, so to the end of his story, he had been hunted down, or not hunted down, but he had been confronted by a sheriff who they had found a cabin made out of bark. So they suspected that's probably where he lived. So they said, you know, come on out. And before they said before the end of the sentence, he had shot back. And he killed two people that were with the sheriff. He shot them before before they could return fire. He did not know how many people were out there, so he had the sheriff had run away, and then came back. And he had told him, "All we want is the strong box." All because they were still they were looking for the money because Mr. Tornow had been suspended. Had a bounty on him for $1,000, which was a lot of money back.
Yeah, then. And didn't it say though too about him that he was really hairy?
Yeah, they call him the Ape Man.
The Ape Man.
Yeah,
like he was Bigfoot or something. And they'd see him running through. I mean, that's kind of easy to picture. You picture a really hairy dude, and then all of a sudden this really hairy dude's like having shootouts with the sheriff and then robbing banks. And then I wonder what the people actually thought when they saw him when he robbed the bank. So
he had the reputation of Jason Voorhees because they used everybody was on a lockdown because they said, you know, hide your children, and they would lock the doors at night back then. You know, that was not nothing, a thing like as common as it is now. You know, people, because he had been known to break into cabins and, you know, take whatever he wanted. And he was about 6'3". So, you know, back then, 250 pounds, 6'3", he was a man bigger than most during his time. So he was known as a bear-like man. He, you know, to keep in mind, he was, you know, a wilderness survivor, so he probably knew he was pretty strong. So he had been confronted by the sheriff at his makeshift cabin in the woods. The sheriff said, "Hey, all we want is the strong box. I'm going to let you go. I want to know where it's at." Well, this is where the really cool part is about as far as what stretches in the modern day. He said, "All right, I'm going to tell you where it's at. It's at this place by the river where there's a rock shaped by like a fish fin, you know, which is near somewhere." The Satsop River, I believe. I'm probably got that wrong, but he had
in Wenatchee.
He had told the sheriff that, and the sheriff shot him. Not knowing if he had killed him, he came back with a posse later, and they surrounded the cabin and they went in and he was dead.
Wow.
You know,
what I was just thinking. I had this idea about him. So a lot of people don't know this either. Magic mushrooms grow in the Olympic Peninsula. Yeah. So I wonder if all these like guys like that who kind of go a little nuts, and they said his brothers called him a little nuts. Didn't they want to commit him? They did commit him. And so to an asylum. So maybe as a wild man, he's out there and he's just taking these magic mushrooms and they're really messing with his head. They're very native to that part of the state, like they grow in abundance, like all up and down the West.
It was said that he had better tracking skills than any other of the people around him. He had the survival skills of a native.
Maybe he was part native too. I think. I mean, a lot of people of back then too are part native. I don't think there was as like a lot of people these days. They don't want a mixture. We don't want to mix with these people. Back then, they didn't care. Natives mixed with whites, whites mixed with natives. They didn't care. You know, I mean, that's just how it was. I mean, that's where, you know, I look at my family tree and I see all these different names, and they're not native. They're
so the part that's really cool that stretches into modern day. They never found a strong box, and some of it was silver coins.
Uh-oh, the dog knew about it, too. Did you hear that?
They did an extensive search of the area. The sheriff tried. He found a spot that he thought he was talking about before he shot him. But he dug, and he couldn't find the strong box.
So it's like the Dutchman's lost mine.
Yeah.
Like there's money out there, or D.B. Cooper's money.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like $15,000 worth of money out there.
From the early 1900s, maybe some silver coin, because when he died, not only did he have $1,700 in a bank account, he owned some land, and he had, I believe, a part in some company.
I wonder if his brothers just had it. They took it and found it, or
who knows? His brothers. He never forgave him for having him committed. He escaped.
Maybe his sister got it because he liked his sister.
Yeah, well, he escaped from the institution he was at. I mean, he was a big man, so he didn't really have much effort. It didn't take much effort. He just walked out.
He probably grabbed people and threw them out away and said, "I'm out of here," and left.
Yeah, so to get on to a little more modern times, there was a man named by the name of Anthony Hathaway of the Seattle area. And he was known, this was around 2016, he was known as the Cyborg Bandit.
The Cyborg Bandit.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit, I thought it was a little cool. He had got that reputation because he had had this mask that had metallic features to it. And it looked like something out of a Hollywood film. And he wasn't even really trying to do something to get known for or anything like that. It was just a mask he wore when he was robbing banks. And he had they suspect him for robbing over 30 banks, and he confessed to as many.
And he was a Boeing engineer, which is crazy.
He had gotten to a life of drugs, and he got into a life of crime in order to support his habits.
Was it opioids?
I believe so. Yeah, painkillers.
He was on the opioids. So, yeah.
So not only was he known as a cyborg bandit, but after he had gotten this reputation from the local media of wearing his mask, and he says, "Well, I better not."
He screwed up totally. He could have been giving HJs and getting all the Oxycontin he wanted. It's just or ZJs or whatever. Like seriously.
Yeah. So.
I wonder what the whole cyborg thing was. And it said his wife was involved, too. She was probably, I don't know if she was into the drugs or not. I don't want to assume. But, you know, the media can't assume.
Oh, yeah. Well, they made a big deal about it. They were attributing it to a big ring, bank robber ring. Of course, the FBI got involved.
He probably was just so smart. He knew how to do it.
Yeah. He eventually started wearing this T-shirt that he cut two holes into it. And that's how he was robbing banks. So they start calling him the Elephant Man robber.
The Elephant Man.
Off of the old 1981 film,
I believe. That was a David Lynch film, wasn't it?
Man. Yes. Yeah, the Elephant Man. Yeah.
I love David Lynch.
Yeah, but, you know, leave it to some people to make up these references, you know.
This guy got crazy. He was a technical designer at the age of 21. Married a lady named Anne Marie. They had a beautiful home. But he just got, you know, that's terrible. You got addicted to, painkillers.
Yeah. Well, which is a real big stigma up here in the Northwest. Nice place to live, except for all the damn drug dealers, man.
Well, there's like druggies all over now. I mean, especially with the advent of casinos. Casinos seem to attract a lot of crime, and we try to our best to keep them out. And you know,
it's not easy, folks.
And that's any cities actually just themselves. Any place you flop a city, you're going to have a crime. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily a casino. I think a casino actually could be totally free of crime. Actually,
yeah.
I'm just kissing my boss's ass. That's all I'm doing.
So he had eventually gotten caught by some surveillance camera footage of him driving away in a vehicle that had a very specific look to it. Some kind of
it didn't look like Buck's truck off. What is it? Buck's truck off Kill Bill 1? That's what.
Oh, there's some kind of a Seattle Seahawks decal on the back window or something that identified the vehicle. So
yeah.
All they had to do was look for the vehicle and they found him.
So if you ever decide to do what Mr. Tony did, Hathaway, don't. You know, advertise who you are on the vehicle.
Yeah, he had apparently gotten away with a few robberies. And I think he's getting ready to get out here in 2024.
Yeah.
He got sentenced to 9 years, I believe, for bank robberies. He did get caught for it. Yeah, so that was kind of a little Dateline of the Week robber who had, you know, had a small career that could probably have been turned into an NBC movie of the week.
Yeah, it's. I think it made national news. It was in Newsweek. It was in Forbes. It was in Seattle, obviously Seattle Times. It made it all the way to The Guardian in the UK. That's pretty famous, actually. You know, you think about it, it kind of went worldwide.
Yeah, another infamous bad man of the Northwest in modern times, and this has happened. And I always thought you would have been interested in this guy because I seen this Dateline.
Was it Bigfoot? Infamous bad man, Bigfoot.
William Scott Scurlock.
I think I was looking at that guy the other day.
He was not
physically, but you know, spiritually looking at him.
Yeah, he was from Virginia. And he moved to Olympia in 78 and went to school at Evergreen State College.
Yeah. Was he called the Hollywood Bandit?
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. Yep. Yeah. He was, he was notorious around that campus. So much so that Matt Groening kind of heard him and kind of he talked. I think he spoke about it in some obscure interview. And I'm probably wrong, and I'm probably getting my.
No, you're probably right. And I was thinking because, you know, for, what is it, Breaking Bad fans, I'm not saying I'm not supporting this or do this. It's kind of interesting that he was breaking into the school chemistry lab to make methamphetamine.
No. He had been given a lab.
Oh, he's been given a lab.
He was studying to be a doctor, a medical doctor, and they had given him his own lab. And
at the school. He was studying to be a doctor at the school. So I was reading it wrong. I was upside down.
Yeah, and he was given... a lab.
Must be the Oxycontin. I can't read straight.
He was making meth after hours.
I'm just kidding. I don't.
And he liked money, and he decided that why become a doctor and make a little bit of money when I can do this and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So in order to get some capital for his drug ventures, he decided one day that he was going to rob a bank. Mm-hmm. His partner at the time had chickened out on him, and after the robbery was done, but Mr. Spurlock liked it and decided to, this was going to be his new venture. He liked the rush, and he was by no means a dumb guy. He apparently had gotten to the point where he was he was refining his methods of bank robbery. He had gotten around, by the time he was ending his career, around $2.3 million that they suspect that he had squared away from all the banks. So he had one of the things that was he was known as the Robin Hood robber because one of the things he built with all that money was this little fantasy island, Robin Hood forest treehouse. They had it all, they took pictures of it. Some of it's still standing today.
They didn't tear it down?
So they did tear some of it down, but some of it had worn away from years of neglect. So there's barely anything left up where it was. But he had this treehouse that had working plumbing, a bathtub, and hot water. So... And he had financed all this with the money he had stolen, and he had gotten this little lifestyle that he got used to. He told everybody he was in construction, and he was a good looking, kind of manipulative kind of guy.
Compared him to Mel Gibson, kind
of. Well, some people kind of...
That's what they said. And then there was another one that's where the... Scurlock was where they got the idea from Point Break. They just changed some few things.
Yeah, matter of fact, I think that was because he kind of looked like the guy.
Yeah, he hung out in Hawaii, too. He probably surfed, you know.
He financed his summer adventures with, you know, his bank robberies, you know. He left the drug business due to all the... close calls and, you know, the shady dealings he had with some of the people. And he just said, you know, I'm going to become a bank robber. And so his partner, one of his partners, his name was Mark Biggins, helped him rob a bank because he had problems, financial problems with nasty custody hearings that he was having, you know, case that he had. And, so, you know, Spurlock kind of took him on as a partner, and they robbed a Seattle bank. And this is the part where it ties into Point Break. One of them wore a Ronald Reagan mask, and the other was a theater makeup, a nose wig and sunglasses.
Looked like a mime.
So that's where they got the Hollywood idea. So because apparently there had been some somebody had... said what they were wearing, and that's where they kind of got that name.
Or maybe they got the idea from Point Break. I think this came. They did that. They started that after the movie came out. You know,
I think that was what, 91.
Yeah, so they maybe got the idea from the movie. People are getting ideas from movies. I always tell that to my wife. We watch Ocean's 11. Yeah. I think I'm gonna go down to Vegas and do it. Do what George Clooney did. No, you can't do that. I know, it's just a movie. So, you know, even Steven Soderbergh said a lot of that's fake. It's just...
So by 95, Scurlock and another partner he had by the name of Steve Myers had stolen over $1 million from Seattle and some Portland banks. So he had gotten away and he had done multiple disguises, and that's where he kind of got the name for being the Hollywood
bandit.
Yeah. So there was a $50,000 reward for information leading up to his arrest, which is kind of like the norm around here for, you know, with Crime Stoppers.
Yeah, such. Crime Stoppers. If you see these people.
Yeah, I've actually had a relative that was in there and a best friend that was. Yeah, people will turn you in for way less than that.
I wonder if he came to Yakima ever. Just stop, drive through, stop by.
Yeah, well, how many bank robberies have we actually had in the valley here? I know of one.
I know the only one I know of is when we had actual guy we kind of worked with. He came to work one day, was acting weird. He wouldn't talk to anybody. You could look up online. He ended up robbing a U.S. bank in Yakima. He would have went, you know, everything would have went good for him if he didn't freak out and start speeding when he saw a sheriff. And then I remember when I was going to Yakima, we saw those cars, and then his van was out in the field, and they were chasing him.
Both me and Coyote Gunning had seen an interaction with this gentleman that morning. We ain't going to say name or who he worked for.
Yeah. Well, I'll say his name. It was in the news, since it's news. It's Dane Andrus.
Yeah.
And he was an all right guy.
I liked him.
I liked him. I wouldn't call him a bad guy. I think he just was... got mixed up, probably owed too much money. I don't know.
I had talked to some
bad choices.
I talked to some people that knew him and had worked with him, and he had been apparently going through an ugly divorce.
So he was having like a little psychological split there.
Yeah, he had a little. He was robbing banks with a little .38, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And the poor guy had been living in his van. You know, as much as. You know, I don't approve of what he did. I can, you know, he was trying to support his family from afar. He had lost his house, apparently. He lived somewhere in Idaho, and he had to go ahead and try to make ends meet.
And so he just thought he'd try robbing a bank, and it didn't work out.
At that time, I did a little bit of research. And they had done some, there were some other robberies that they're looking into that had occurred about the same time. And whether or not he was tied to any of them,
I don't even know. Maybe my estimation of him being a good guy was probably wrong. Maybe he was a real bad guy.
They suspect that he had probably pulled this before.
So.
Because they're not sure, but they had an undisclosed amount of money that he had gotten away with before he got caught. Yeah, so it made the news. There was a footage of it on the 5 o'clock news, you know, and it just kind of, from where we sit, where the getaway vehicle ended up.
Yeah, just down the road from where we're sitting is where the getaway vehicle ended up.
Yeah.
He didn't pass away, though, like Scurlock, I think he did. Didn't he pass away to get... They got in one of those big chases, didn't they?
I believe what happened to him is that after a few years of doing these robberies, he got away with over $1 million in one of them. They had shot and wounded one of his guys, Mr. Myers, Steve Myers, and Biggins, and... they had a little over $1 million that had they had taken, and Scurlock had vanished.
Biggins. Okay.
Yeah. he had stayed hidden for a whole day. Okay, so all the police were looking for him. It was something like it was akin to the Boston bomber. They were looking for him everywhere, and just by the off chance they had got a report of somebody who was hiding out in the back of a, I believe it was a trailer, and a couple boys were looking through the outline of the window, and they saw a man in there, and they reported a stranger to the cops immediately. So the cops came, they surrounded the van, or I think it was a, what was it? It was a camper.
It was a camper.
And they threw some pepper spray grenades or something like that inside the windows after they told him to come out. He didn't respond. They threw them in, and they tried opening the door. He shot. They heard a gunshot, and then they had eventually opened it up after a couple hours, thinking that maybe he was still alive, but he had shot himself.
Yeah,
and he had lived his life of crime, and he didn't fear, he didn't want to end up spending the rest of his life in.
And he could have been a doctor, folks.
Yeah,
been a doctor.
Yeah, and he was at the time.
The message is stay in school.
Yeah, more money in the long run.
More money in the long run. Invest in the stocks. Do it the legal way.
Do it the white collar criminal way, and rip off people with a pin instead of a gun. Yeah. So he was one of the most prolific bank robbers in all of Washington's history, and by around the time of his robberies and his crimes, he was one of the most prolific bank robbers of America. You know, he's right up there with some of the more notorious bank robbers, such as the Hollywood bank robbers from, you know, that you may have heard of, that took on the cops with AK-47s. He was right up there with them. You know, I mean, he may not have been as violent, but, you know, he was a guy who had gotten away with quite a few bank robberies. They think he estimated he was responsible for 17 robbed banks.
And how many people did he hurt, though? I mean, that's kind of crazy. It just seems like he didn't, like, when they robbed, they didn't hurt anybody.
From what I understand, some of them were, I don't think I've heard of any of them. But the cyborg bandit, he had robbed banks without a weapon. He just told them he had a weapon.
And they thought he did. He was smart. Yeah. Both these guys were smart. One was an engineer. This other guy was a 2B doctor who looked like Mel Gibson. And people probably... And he was just smart enough to be able to pull it off. He knew how to psychologically play people without having to even use the gun.
There was a guy up in, I'd have to look it up and do a little more research, but there was a guy who, in one instance, he robbed a bank. He had gotten away by using a rubber inner tube.
Down the river?
Down the river.
He got in it.
He had figured out that the best way to evade the cops was not to use a bike or a motorcycle or a car. He had gotten away by using a bike to get down to the riverfront, got his looted cash, put it in a plastic bag underneath him, and used the inner tube that he had set up ahead of time, and just calmly floated away.
And he got away, folks.
Yeah. He eventually got caught, and he when he got out, I can't remember his name, but he did this YouTube video on bank robberies on how to rob banks. You know, he said basically in the end, he said, "Don't do it. The money is short, and you're always paranoid. And once you do it, you always want to have the need for more money." And he says, "I gave up. I think he served 8 years. He said, did 8 years. I gave up 8 years of my life." For something I shouldn't have gotten into.
For just a short rush.
Yeah. So, you know, short money is really short money.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. As exciting as that lifestyle may be, I believe that eventually it all catches up to you in the end. One of my bandit buddies told me he was notorious for a little bit of a pharmaceutical... street sales, and setting up his own little franchise, and he had always told me, you know, it all catches up to you in the end, and he was right. You know, it does eventually catch up to you in one way or the other.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so that's the end of my short list. There's one other person.
There's two other guys. I mean, local guys. I mean, James and Donovan Cloud, they made national news when they killed those five people. I mean, it was all over methamphetamine. Anyway, and then they were trying to connect them to the disappearance of the two guys from California. We've talked about them before, the disappearance of the two men.
Oh, yeah.
Jose Hildebrand and John Cleary. And then they found their remains just right up the hill over here. But they're on their way to see a Grateful Dead concert. But we never really talked about, you know, the assault they did. They drove up to a house. The news covered this pretty well. You can read it. They drove up to a house. They went in and demanded, you know, protection.
Yeah.
So the young guy comes up and he's like, you know, he's like, get out of here. And then they shoot him. They had no qualm with it. And I think that's kind of crazy.
And there was a retaliation murder that somebody had committed because he apparently had murdered somebody's cousin. And the relative and in turn went and murdered one of those other guys.
Yeah, so it kind of gets a little crazy Game of Thrones-like here.
Oh, don't forget the weed stores that hit in, I believe it was in Utah.
Yeah, and there's people have been hitting weed stores here too. I mean, it kind of gets crazy. Those are bad men. Do not do that. Go to school. Go to school. School is good.
Yeah, there might
crime
be,
is bad.
There might school be a part two coming to this.
Is good.
Because as soon as we get off this, off the air here, I'm going to show Mr. Gunyan a book I had discovered,
yeah.
Written by somebody who is from the Northwest, by the name of Elizabeth Gibson. She had wrote this book called Outlaw Tales of Washington. Not a very well-known book, but actually I did see this book at my local library when I was younger. That's how long it's been.
People used to use libraries too.
Yeah, this is before she had written it before it, prolification of the internet, and one of the subjects was this man named Lawrence Kelly, who smuggled everything from illegal immigrants to opium.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm gonna have to get this on we might do a part two, but the local.
I was already thinking of the next show, actually, but not a part two. But we could do a part two.
Later on, yeah.
Because there's so many people. I was thinking about all those things from the 80s, because they keep coming up.
Yeah.
Like phone books.
Yeah.
For all the people that don't know what a phone book is. Phone booth. Mm-hmm. 1-800 numbers.
1-800-COLLECT. Yeah, yeah. Good old... I remember that commercial with the guy with the glasses, and he was actually in a couple movies. Remember? Yeah. Yeah.
Or Cleo, call now and I will give you your free reading. Call now. And the lady's not even Jamaican. She's just faking her Jamaican accent. And
yeah.
That was some amazing stuff. I don't even know if that was that 90s or 80s, but there's just so much nostalgia from back then. I always keep seeing it online. It's kind of like that paper towel dispenser. It didn't dispense paper towels. It was just like a recyclable... like a cloth with mm-hmm. like a blue line down it.
And notorious then, at bowling alleys.
And then I was like, I remember those, but you know, you never touch it if it's brown or you don't sniff, you know, don't sniff it because somebody might have wiped themselves with it.
Yeah. You used to pull it and it'd make this loud noise. Yeah, and then it always had.
It wasn't disposable either. They'd probably send it to like Cintas to get washed or something like that.
Yeah. And it had a mirror on it all the time. Which, or if it did, sometimes it was cracked or missing or busted.
And it was usually next to those machines that had like a Spanish fly and massage oil.
The French tickler.
Yeah, all that weird stuff. And I was like, yeah, people don't remember that stuff. And sometimes, you know, older restrooms had cigarette machines too. I was like, but in our technology, we kind of lose the fact that we had all kinds of different weird technology. It wasn't even technology. It was just... It was weird marketing. To me, it's marketing. I don't know.
It's Delta, yeah. The 80s were confusing, scary, and it was fun. It was not quite the 70s, and it wasn't quite the 90s. It was just a...
And back then, yeah. In the 80s, all the conservatives hated Russia. Yeah. And now they all love them for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, you got presidents handshaking with these guys. When they would stand across the room and stare at each other, you know, in contempt and hate. You know?
Yeah, now it's different. We love them.
Yeah.
I don't even know the country. I don't want to judge them. Whatever, it's their country.
Maybe we'll do that on the next time. So you could give the Northwest perspective on the 80s, which I just can't.
I think Northwest perspective is kind of the same as everybody else, you know.
I recently discovered a YouTube video. I'll have to link it in for you fans out there, of Yakima, Washington. Person had did footage of from the 1950s of downtown Yakima, and they did an overshot view of the Yakima Valley, and looked to be a native Yakima man, who's probably somebody's grandfather in the first part of the video. They were also referencing miners in the video, which is a mainstay of Yakima. And there was also a top seven places to eat in the Yakima Valley, which I thought was kind of cool.
There's a lot of history. Like, I was reading about how Frederick Mercy Sr., they dynamited a church. They bought an old church from, you know, these pastors, and they wanted to build a theater, so they blow it up. And I think that's where the Capitol Theater stands now, and apparently the Capitol Theater's haunted too. I mean, that's actually another good story.
Yeah, in that video, they were showing the Capitol Theater with a movie marquee signs on the front of it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was different, because today you go there, it's a theater for the arts, plays, musicals, operas, performers. I remember back in, I think it was 1990 or 91, I think it was Poison that had a concert there, and the kids that went, because this was during my time when I was in
Screaming Trees. It was the Screaming Trees.
Yeah, I guess they rioted, or they had gotten really down. Some chairs got broken.
They tore out like all the front row seats, because there's no place to mosh. There's no place to get down. So,
yeah.
I was like, you expect to have a heavy metal concert in this theater, which is like built for metal, like a symphonic, you know, and plays. And,
One of my buddies had gone to that, and he came back from the weekend, and told all the school kids what had happened. And that was like the last concert, rock concert they ever had
there. I know, they just like canceled them. Even at the Sundown, they were getting rock concerts. And we actually had Elton John come here once. I was like, holy cow, we had Elton John here? Wow.
Yeah, man, the pedigree of the performers here in the Yakima Valley is pretty storied. Ray Charles had played here back in the 50s, and Quincy Jones has come through here.
Lionel Hampton, when I was in the jazz band, we got to play before Lionel Hampton on stage. Well, we shared a stage with Lionel Hampton, so that was actually cool. So I was thinking, like Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho. I mean, it is good to take a trip back in time just to see how people thought, what were they doing back then? That made it interesting. There's all kinds of weird stuff, like the paper towel dispensers, the brown ones, and then that.
I remember going to Yakima in the early 80s, and my dad used to drag me around everywhere. My father had a art business he was supported by. He would go to bars. This is when kids were allowed to go with adults to bars.
You could either go on or sit in the car. Me and my brother always sat in the back with our McDonald's.
Yeah, my father used to drag me around, and I would walk into these bars in the back alley poker places with guys smoking cigars, you know.
The waitresses were probably older, and they'd serve you, right? You want something to eat? You're not supposed to be in here. You know, Steve, you're not supposed to bring your son, but we'll get him, you know, dinner if he wants. All right, cool, you know.
Yeah. I remember my parents used to park outside this place out, Sela, and we got taught valuable lessons from this old drunk guy who come out, because he just wanted to smoke outside, and he was talking to me and my sister.
Cattlemen's. We got left outside of Cattlemen's a lot.
Yeah.
Down there used to be this bar where all the cowboys would go down in Toppenish, and called Cattlemen's, and we'd all go sit there. All the kids would be in the car and we'll wait for the parents.
Yeah, I was later called the Cimarron, if I remember right. And then it got involved in some kind of scandal right before it shut down.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're probably going to do that next episode. So we'll get to you on that one.
Yeah. And then We won't talk about how Robert got mono from his cousin.
It's not what you think, folks. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, only so. Cousins above the neck.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, we're going to sign off.
Say goodnight, Robert.
Goodnight. We're going to sign off.
All right.